Hello, and welcome to the University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix Family, Community, and Preventive Medicine Quarterly Department Updates. Happy holidays and end of the calendar year. This month, we have updates on the 3-year accelerated medical school pathway, the Yuma expansion campus, and evolving efforts around workforce and the upcoming rural health transformation program. We also have updates on behavioral health and lifestyle intervention in the department, an interview with Claire around her role in the Community Health Advisory Council, interview with Nikki around coordination of our research programs, and finally, some reflections from my husband, Daniel, and daughter, Ingrid. And just to keep it weird, I have a reflection from AI Shari on it all as well. Let me tell you about upcoming events. February 10th, we have the Primary Care Physician Workforce Summit 3. So it's the third day-long planning meeting about primary care physician workforce planning in the state of Arizona and how to best respond to the needs of the state. Quickly Pair Residency Learning Network virtual meeting February 9th. April 16th, we have a Prickly Pear in-person meeting in Phoenix. Concurrently, we have Focus Pocus, statewide primary care ultrasound training program that is kicking off. Again, that's April 16th in Phoenix. April 17th, we have the annual Arizona Academic Family Medicine Innovation Conference in Phoenix. This year, it'll be at the Virginia Piper Center in the old Phoenix High School buildings on the College of Medicine Phoenix campus. It'll be followed by a social hour and residency career fair. In May, we have our annual department meeting and awards dinner, most likely at the University Club again. We continue to work on an aggressive schedule of events to support our mission and engage our communities across the state. Again, if anybody needs any travel lodging assistance and you are faculty out of the Phoenix area for the many Phoenix events, we would like to help you out. First up, we have Dr. Katie Bright, Associate Dean of Community Engagement.
Katie Bright, there's so much going on, so many exciting new things in all of the work that you've been doing. I feel like it's coming to fruition.
We've had lots of progress on some of our exciting innovative initiatives. So one update is our 3-year MD Primary Care Accelerated Pathway. We talked about how it had been approved last time. We were starting an application cycle. So we had 7 students that made it through the rigorous screening process and their interviews with residency programs across the state, and they were selected to start and be the inaugural cohort in the 3-year MD program for future primary care doctors. So we had 5 selected to go into family medicine, 1 in internal medicine, and 1 in pediatrics. And they have lots of milestones ahead of them. It's a rigorous curriculum. They have to pass step 1 and continue to progress and do well, both academically and professionally, but it's such a huge and exciting win. So that's one big one. And I think another big one to talk about is we have been working for really decades with rural and tribal communities across the state. And we finally had success in working on one of our partnerships in Yuma. So we will be opening a branch campus for the University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix in Yuma, starting with the cohort we're recruiting now. So starting with our students in July of 2026, we'll be having 15 students that will be part of this Yuma campus. And that is just really exciting for us as well. Additionally, they'll all be going into primary care, the PCAP program. So family medicine, internal medicine, and pediatrics, which is awesome for our workforce and for Arizona. So 15 more students going into primary care at a regional branch campus. Couldn't be more excited. So many people have been working towards these momentous big things. It's very exciting.
It's hard to believe it when I see the press releases come out, or it just looks so real suddenly.
So much that we're getting asked to go to other schools like University of Washington and Miami to talk about our 3-year program. So yeah, it's definitely gaining traction and attention nationwide and internationally.
That's wonderful. I remember when we sat around and we're trying to come up with creative things to put on grant applications and describing the future. And it kind of felt unreal. It's like, well, okay, let's do it. Let's go for it. What else? What other updates?
Well, in the University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix has been working, like I had mentioned, across the state to help rural and tribal communities. So one thing we've been doing is supporting this AHEC initiative to create a consortium sponsoring institution to help, you know, rural and tribal communities be able to perform GME programs. And that's been amazing. We're part of a pilot program to have that expedited. And so both that sponsoring institution and a new program at Sun Life and Casa Grande are slated to be reviewed in the next few months by the ACGME. So that's just another mechanism to form, to help communities across the state form GME programs. And, you know, we need it because everything's been in Phoenix and Tucson really forever. So it's just so exciting to be able to join places like Payson who have GME programs, thanks to you and others going strong, but just help them form across the state so we can get doctors training where they're needed.
Yeah, it's I find it very rewarding to think of how we could be impacting communities across the state.
I really don't feel like I could ever remember a time in my career where I have felt more, you know, excited and enthusiastic and felt like I've been doing more meaningful work. So yeah, I think it's all, like you said, lots of work coming to fruition, and it's very exciting right now.
It is. It is. Let's see. So a lot of changes that we've had to kind of roll with, but one of the positive things in those changes is this Rural Health Transformation Program. Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are, you know, what's needed in the state. What kind of work related to this should go into that?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Rural Health Transformation Plan. It's a CMS federal grant offering for all of the states. Arizona has put in a request to have about $200 million a year. We won't probably get that, but it's really exciting because one of the big chunks of this funding, about a quarter or more, a little more than a quarter, is for workforce, healthcare workforce needs across the state in rural and tribal communities, which really aligns with all of the stuff we've been talking about. But additionally, it will support critical access rural hospitals, tribal communities. It will support technology expansion for things like telehealth in the most remote regions. So more to come on that, I think, Sean. And you know, you and I worked on this together with many things that we think could go into this proposal, but it's just very synergistic with what we know has to happen and with the projects we have going on.
Excellent. Any other parting updates that you want to give?
I just appreciate everybody's work across all the different areas. I think the Family Medicine Department is really just making huge strides in Phoenix, urban underserved, and beyond. And it's very exciting, and excited to be part of the team.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shari.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Gina Touch Mercer, I think we're long overdue for some updates on some of the work you're doing around behavioral health and lifestyle medicine and motivational interviewing. Tell people in the department a little bit about yourself, your background, your experiences that have led up to the work you do today.
Sure. Well, I spent about 10 years teaching in a doctoral program as core faculty. And then I moved over to medical education and was the behaviorist at Abrazo Family Medicine for about 3 years, and then moved into the medical school. So I've been there for the past 8 years. And most of what I teach are the kinds of things around bedside manner, patient-physician relationships, and counseling skills that really do help people, especially patients who come to family medicine physicians, to change their life around.
Oh, but tell us a little bit or perhaps reflect on what's the role of behavioral health in primary care in the past and today.
Well, when I was involved in it, it was probably about 10 years ago. There were long sessions for many weeks, for even months or longer. And so we would get warm handoffs from family doctors. And it really did make a difference, I think, with patient care and lifestyle changes. But a lot of times the patients have complex medical problems, which you know. So it really would take a long time to make the kinds of changes or the kind of deep psychological recovery. So I think in the last 5 to 10 years, a new model of kind of short-term therapy called integrated behavioral health, and clinicians like social workers or psychologists might see patients for 25 minutes to a half an hour for about 5 to 7 visits. And if they need more psychological counseling, they would refer them on from there. But the idea is to kind of be a therapist available to the entire practice of patients who have anxiety or depression or substance use issues to help them deal better with their medical problems. So I think it's still almost like a long-term change model. And what's exciting, and you and I have talked about, is really the kind of prevention approach. So how do we intervene very early? How do we kind of prescribe things that like exercise and lifestyle changes, socialization and stress management, and not just say these are good for you, you should do them, but actually offer ways that patients can do those. And I think it's really more of a partnership or a whole person model where it's not just a handoff, but it's really an integrated team approach on an outpatient basis. I think one of the things that I always felt like family medicine physicians would see multiple members of the family, but one-on-one basis. Why are we maybe not seeing a family or a couple or, you know, a mom and child together to address some of the really family relationship issues that can keep people stuck or maybe not making changes, let's say, to diet or exercise or lots of the kind of addictive substances that people use tend to run in families, right?
I'm remembering a conversation that I had with medical students in their clerkship, and we were talking about screening studies, you know, mammograms, colon cancer screening. And then they said, how do you get people to agree to do these things? Mm. They wanted to know, how will I get people to do these things? How to talk people into doing things that are healthy for them? But this is a whole area that needs to be taught and thought about. I cannot answer that in an hour.
Right. Well, and even the little bit of exposure that our students have to motivational interviewing is a lot more than other medical students have at different schools. What can improve in terms of helping people want to change on their own, not doing it because it's the right thing the doctor says to do. So it really is a set of skills, and we can teach those skills. And that's where I think physicians can almost coach and use some different kind of language when we're talking to patients about behavior change.
Shifting gears just a little bit, lifestyle medicine, it's this effort to maximize the medical approach on many lifestyle-sensitive conditions. Tell us about your evolving role and what your goals are in this.
Yeah, it's been exciting because I think the Service of Community students really want to help people in the community make changes that have real impacts on their health. So we're getting some experts in each of the six pillars of lifestyle medicine: sleep, improved sleep, obviously stress management, socialization, nutrition. Again, the motivational interviewing piece is how do we get them to want to do what really would help their health? So we've had two speakers already, and we plan to have four more around, addressing risky substance use. And that's kind of a newer pillar of lifestyle medicine. We want to talk about harm reduction, and we want to talk about how physicians can really support better lifestyle choices for patients, motivate their patients and possibly family members to help support them in the lifestyle behavior changes that will impact anxiety, depression, substance use, and chronic illnesses.
So what would be your ultimate goal in this? Or what would be a big goal for us?
Yeah, I think, again, I remember being really excited when I heard that physicians in some parts of the country were prescribing like fruits and vegetables, and they would give people a prescription and they could go and get like from a, not just from a maybe food pantry, but from a fresh community garden. The kinds of nourishment that maybe they were lacking. So I really foresee kind of some new offerings in terms of what physician offices and integrated behavioral health practice can entail, which might be education about health in a fun way, exercise with a fitness instructor who's certified in kind of health management and health promotion, and shared group visits so that diabetes prevention or diabetes management is easier when people are supporting each other, you know, doing the same kinds of things. So I really do think more groups and more exercise classes and maybe nutrition, cooking, healthy cooking classes where people are doing that together, those kinds of socialization experiences, community gardening, the kinds of things that really do promote not just being well in one of those six pillars of health, but really many or all of them.
Well, thank you so much for just hopping on and doing this. It helps for people to see all these different aspects in the department. It takes a team to get all of this work done. The support staff on our team stands out in their dedication to the mission of the department. We have Claire Turner and Nikki Marshall up next.
I have Claire Turner here. Claire's our executive assistant for the Department of Family and Community Preventive Medicine and does a fantastic job keeping us all in line. Don't you, Claire?
I try. Sometimes I'm more successful than others.
Claire, what do you want to share about your background that's led you up to this work with us today?
Well, I had never worked in education before, and I was intrigued. I applied for the role that I have now, and working in family medicine has been an eye opener for me, especially the dire need for doctors in the country overall and the need for family medicine doctors in rural areas in Arizona.
Have you felt like, hey, I'm actually really personally invested in improving this problem?
I am. I'm really invested. And every person, new person I meet, and I tell them I work at the College of Medicine in Phoenix, and then I start prattling on about rural medicine and underserved communities. And I am very passionate about it. I kind of knew a little bit about it before, but now I'm like fully invested. And
that's wonderful. What do you like best about your work?
I have a heavy workload, but I like being able to manage it in my own way. And I'm very independent, and people know that in the department. So I don't have anybody micromanaging me, which is great because I do not thrive under that kind of work environment. So, and pretty much everybody, if I say, hey, I need this, and they'll get it to me. Or if I have to ask a couple times, I'll say, well, hey, Dr. Veras has asked me to get this. And then I get it pretty much straight away. So I throw your name in there every now and again.
You've been pretty personally invested in making sure this Community Health Advisory Council comes to fruition.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what you think about that project and the importance of that component.
The Community Health Advisory Council is gathering a bunch of people from these different organizations so that they all can collaborate together and work on underserved populations, rural populations, different topics that will help the community.
Yeah, it's good to have community members involved. I feel like it elevates the work, don't you?
I do. And the fact that the committee will be mostly community members makes it even better. It won't be the college directing community members on what to do. It'll be the community members leading the charge.
Yeah, I love that, Tim. Anything else that you want to say about family medicine and your role?
My favorite thing about family medicine is match day. So I keep a tally of everyone who goes into family medicine, if they go into rural areas, and if they stay in Phoenix to help with this problem. Yeah, match day is my favorite. I tear up sometimes because I get so proud. I'm so proud. They're like my children going off out into the world.
I had no idea that you were personally invested in match day.
Yeah, I am. I keep a tally, and it's the people who stay in Phoenix and Tucson that I pay particular attention to.
Super. That's great. Thank you for being a good sport and doing this. I have Nikki Marshall, our manager of research. Nikki, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you do the work you do.
Well, I actually fell into research on accident, as I think a lot of people do. I went to school to become a medical assistant with the plan to kind of work in a variety of different departments and specialties and figure out which one I like the most. My very first job out of school was a tiny little PCP office that specialized in internal medicine. And I worked there for a month. And they were like, you know what? Why don't you check out our research department, which was one person running like 15 trials by herself. So I did, and I fell in love with it and helped her grow her little research department over double the size that it was. I've been in research ever since. So I've got about 13 years of clinical trial history under my belt, primarily industry and sponsored trials. now I'm transitioning into more of like a quality initiative or quality improvement and grants and student projects. So it's very different. I have a lot to learn, but it's also very exciting.
I never really asked you about that background, but I did notice that, gosh, what study was it? We had a study and you showed up and was like, well, I looked through the protocol and this is how I mapped it out. And I thought, somebody knows what they're...
It's easy for me to look at a protocol and kind of from a coordinator perspective and say, okay, how logistical is this? How is this going to work operationally? It's a little bit more challenging because this is a new department. So I'm still kind of trying to integrate myself and figure out where I fit in and how I can fit in. But generally speaking, it's easy to look at a protocol or a project and say, okay, this isn't going to work because of this. Or I think that, we need to do this differently if we want this result. I do love what I do. So it doesn't quite feel like work so much.
I think it's just always fun to learn new things and figure out how to solve new problems. So it seems like you're getting to do that. What's your favorite thing about it?
Honestly, don't know that I can say that I have a favorite yet. Generally speaking, so far in the role, I love the starting at ground zero. I love that we kind of have the flexibility and adaptability to start. We're building this as we go. It's not something that's, some of it's already been in place, but trying to build the framework that's going to impact lots and lots and lots of generations of new incoming students and projects that are starting and grants that are we're kind of trying to streamline it all and figure out the best way to approach it and build that organization.
I always find that works kind of satisfying. It's like all the things that need to get done so everybody can sensibly get their work done.
Yes. You're making sure that it flows efficiently and that it makes sense and that it's going to work for everybody.
What's your overall impression of Family Community Medicine?
We're all in this together as a team and working towards the same goals.
Sometimes people will tell me, you have the nicest people in your department.
How nice everybody is and supportive and welcoming. It makes you more motivated.
Anything else that you want people to know about you?
I am extremely detail-oriented, which is a blessing and a curse. So, I want to make sure that anything I'm doing is meeting the needs and the expectations and kind of the vision of who I'm doing it for or who I'm working with.
Wonderful. I think that's great. And you're also a good sport because you agreed to just do this interview on the fly.
Yes, thank you.
I wanted to squeeze in this last part. We all know all the work that goes into making our academic projects and our medical work possible. Two of my support people at home, my husband Daniel and my daughter Ingrid, agreed to a brief interview to help reflect on this.
I am here with my husband, Daniel, and of course, it is in the morning before a bunch of my meetings start for the day, and he has graciously agreed to do this audio interview. So Daniel's probably sitting here thinking, what did I get myself into? And honestly, sometimes I think the whole spouse of a medical career probably feels that way sometimes. What did I get myself into? Okay. If you think back, what has been the most surprising thing about being a spouse of a family medicine doctor?
I think where we've seen success over the last 20 plus years is really trying to maintain some sort of semblance of work-life balance. It's not just physical work that the physician is going to do. There's going to be emotional, there's going to be mental, there's going to be stress, there's going to be all kinds of things that are not typical of, I believe, a typical 9-to-5 job. So there's weekends, there's nights, there's a whole myriad of options. And you just have to kind of find the sweet spot, what works for your life, what works for your family, a lot of communication. More communication typically is better. Sometimes you have to adjust as a couple, as a family. Something might be right now, but in 5, 10, 15 years, things are going to change. So you really have to be flexible with open communication, with support. I think that's where you're really going to find success.
I am remembering back up in Seattle when I was at University of Washington, when we first met and you said, I'm sorry, you're medical school, to be a doctor? That's crazy. Do you think you had any idea then what the extent of this thing would be?
I think I did. We've always my family's always had high regard, esteem, respect for people that are physicians, people that are in the medical profession. It's just been very, it's been somewhat interesting to see the progression from medical student to resident to faculty to department chair. Some of it is just the amount of responsibility and work that your doctor, your family wants to take on. There's no shame as far as putting in the effort. Every family, every physician is going to have a different paradigm of what the ultimate responsibilities for the family will be. And that, once again, that might morph over time. When we first started working, we both were working full time, and there became a kind of line in the sand for us that made a lot of sense as far as me like stepping aside as a full-time stay-at-home dad. It just depends. You just find the sweet spot, you know, find the optimal path forward for the family. And I think that's where you're going to find a lot of success, not just in the short term, but also having kind of the like the long-term vision of where ultimately you want to proceed as best as possible.
Tell me a little bit about the what's it like being on the other side for somebody that does call and the other side of the parenting dyad? Give us a little peek into your world.
I think once again, it just kind of depends what the priorities are. To me, that's been very rewarding as far as trying to be there, go the extra mile for the family, knowing that these stressors are a serious part of trying to be really receptive to the demands of a very difficult job, but also a very rewarding job. And I think when we've been successful, it's been kind of the clear communication is make sure we're kind of on the same page in the short term and our long-term vision. I think that's where we've really achieved success. There's times, yeah, where the hours are very, very demanding. But it's back to akin when you have like a 1 year old or young kids, and they're not sleeping through the night. A certain amount of period, it's difficult to maintain your faculties and go without sleep. Every stage is rewarding.
Holidays are always interesting with the medicine. Reflect a little bit. I know sometimes our stress level gets really high around the holidays.
I don't know. For the holidays and having cognizance of the different demands of the profession, I honestly don't have a problem with the holidays. If you need to step up for the team, I mean, somebody else ultimately is going to get stuck with, you know, the undesirable holidays. But as long as it's a fair and transparent and equitable process, I have no qualms about that. Let's say instead of celebrate on a certain day, we'll celebrate the next day after you've had like a good night's sleep. I don't have any really problems with that. Holidays to me are not that much of an issue.
Yeah. Last question. You're really good at saying, are you really stressed or are you mad at me? I think when I hear about people that have conflict, it's like how to manage the stress has still not been figured out.
I think, yeah, it just comes back to the communication. It comes back to trying to support the person. You know, if I can step in and kind of give some maybe objective or sage advice, I think that's probably the best way to proceed there. But not to take it personally, you really have to obviously be there present in the short term, but also kind of take the long view as far as, you know, being an advocate for your patients and being a kind of a stalwart in the community to really make community a better place.
The medical careers are definitely not a casual little thing that anybody does on the side, but the whole family to some extent ends up getting, for better or for worse, kind of involved.
I think if the family is kind of like on the same page and we kind of like go in as the mentality of you're not in it alone. It's not just like your profession. It's basically our livelihood. I think that you'll see that's where the physician is going to feel supported and the family is not going to feel marginalized. And I think you're going to have lots of success.
Thank you so much for doing this interview. I asked other faculty if their spouses might be willing to do this, and they all said not it.
I enjoyed having my career, but it wasn't like my absolute passion, so I was happy to kind of like step aside after 12 years as a business analyst and kind of support the family. And I can dabble from things to things. I have 2 master's degrees, but at the end of the day, you know, my job is to support my wife and my family as much as I can, and I feel like this is the role that I'm happy to play.
Okay,
I have somehow talked my daughter, Ingrid Varis, into doing a quick interview. Ingrid is my oldest, and she's home from college on winter break, so she was an easy target to interview. Ingrid, tell me, what's your overall impression of the career medicine, having a mom that's a doctor?
I would say a lot of late nights, busy weekends, definitely the feeling that work is never ending. As a kid, it was always like working late, having to sometimes miss stuff. I had a dad that stayed at home and drove me to school and helped pick me up from things, helped get me places. And I think he was one of the only dads that like parent pickup and stuff like that. So definitely like a switch in gender roles for sure. I'd say compared to a lot of my other friends' parents, professions, definitely more time involved.
I'm so used to it that I don't necessarily think about it, but I think sometimes it's the most striking when you have a friend whose parents both work like 8 to 5 and then you have a parent that's like, no, the night is young. We still have work to do.
I feel like a very different family structure than the traditional.
Yeah, I think we tried to do that up until we moved to Colorado, and then we said mercy. It started to fall apart. Was there ever a time you remember thinking, hey, this is kind of cool, maybe I'm interested in medicine?
Me personally, I would say no, just because I've never been interested in healthcare, medical sciences of any sort. But I definitely know that some of my other siblings have caught an interest in it. I just don't want to have such a hefty workload or have the pressure of, you know, people's lives on my hands. But I think it's a very admirable profession, just not one that's fit for me.
Do you think that it's changed how you think about how best to utilize the healthcare systems and that sort of thing?
I'd say, yeah, I think maybe. It's definitely nice to have a parent with medical expertise because I can text every time when I have a new health problem. Ask her if I should go to the doctor or not. I think sometimes people go, like, they either go too late or they go too early. So it's nice to know. My eardrum ruptured in New York. I texted my mom first and then sought out urgent care afterwards.
So it maybe helps you navigate things a little bit better. Yeah. What else would you want to tell people?
I'd say that it's great to pursue careers in medicine and to empower people in that. But definitely with families, there has to be, like, some sort of support for parents. Definitely makes me reflect on my future career choices. Definitely just think about your priorities in life, if that's work or having a family, and make sure you have someone that can support you. And
Makes sense. Yeah. Thank you, Ingrid.
You're welcome.
So I asked ChatGPT to come up with an AI Shari response for the work-life balance and the role that families play in this.
When people ask AI about medical careers, the questions often go beyond training or titles. They ask about time, energy, and how this work shows up at home. Academic medicine adds another layer. The work is varied. It's creative. It's teaching, clinical care, research, leadership community partnerships. It often requires deep focus and sustained dedication. Many days end with physicians feeling spent, and it's a catch-22. If you don't give it your all, then there can be guilt. You are giving full energy, solving complex problems, being there for patients, colleagues, and staff. That can feel good, but it can also leave you feeling spent at the end of the day. What AI consistently sees in these questions is that medicine is never just an individual career. Partners and children adapt to unpredictable schedules, emotional weight, and the intensity of work that doesn't always stop at the end of the day. Families also witness purpose. They see work that improves communities, expands access, trains future physicians, and builds systems that serve people. And that meaning helps sustain the group effort. And the most durable medical careers are supported by patience, understanding, and shared values at home. As this year comes to a close, this reflection is a thank you to the families and friends who support this work and to the faculty and staff whose dedication makes it possible.
Thank you again for virtually attending today. Hopefully we found this useful and learned something new about the department. I'm so grateful to work with such talented and dedicated people. Nice to remember again, February 9th, Prickly Pear for the residency programs, February 10th, Primary Care Physician Workforce Summit, April 16th, a prickly pear residency meeting, Focus Pocus workshop, April 17th, annual Arizona Academic Family Medicine Innovation Conference. And in May, we have our annual all department meeting. Take care.